What about the other two officers who have now been, they have been suspended or placed on administrative lead? Can you talk about them confirming what Tensing said, that he was being dragged, not saying that the man was dead in the car? The car started going after he shot him in the head.
Yeah, that is extremely difficult for me to imagine, that these two officers are not being charged because they clearly lied. And also, I may add that these same two officers were involved in my cousin's murder as well. So there's a lot of evidence that they should no longer be on the force as well. I think that the university president should have fired them also, as well as the prosecutor charging them with this blatant lie. It's clear, even though all three officers knew that Officer Tasing had a body camera on, they still chose to lie. And that is very problematic for people who are trying to reform police departments and build stronger community relations with police, in particular the University of Cincinnati's police department.
Now, it is very rare for a police officer to be charged for a murder. You heard the cheer break out in the courtroom. Can you talk about the significance, and we just have 10 seconds, of the DA's very strong response, the immediate indictment for murder, not to mention the mayor backing him up?
Well, one, the mayor had the same problem in 2001 when he was chair of law and public safety, and that's when the eruption spilled into the streets of Cincinnati, Ohio, part of his language. Two, African Americans in the city of Cincinnati have had a terrible relationship with the prosecutor, Joe Dieters. So we are waiting for a conviction. We're not in celebratory mode. Officer Tasing has bonded himself out. The family is very worried about that, and so is the community. So we're waiting on a conviction.
Iris Rowley, we hope to speak to you again next week. Longtime police accountability activist with the Cincinnati Black United Front. That does it for our broadcast. A fond farewell to our cameraman, Jose Miranda.
All right. You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8:01. Up next, Positively Revolting.
What would you have instead?
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 17th annual Pickathon, July 31st through August 2nd. Pickathon is 3 days and 7 stages of performances by a variety of bands such as Tune Yards, Shabazz Palaces, Ty Segall, Leon Bridges, Freakwater, and dozens more. Pickathon takes place at Pendarvis Farm in Happy Valley and features weekend or single-day tickets, as well as wooded camping, food trucks, and local beverages. A full list of artists, stage schedule, ticket prices, and transportation options can be found at KBOO.fm/Pickathon2015.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present The Yes Men Are Revolting as part of the KBOO at the Clinton monthly film series. The Yes Men Are Revolting is a documentary directed by Andy Bickelbaum and Mike Bonanno, which follows the comedy troupe The Yes Men as they stage phony press releases and events to bring attention to environmental dangers and corporate greed. Again, that's The Yes Men Are Revolting, Thursday, August 13th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The revolution will not be brought to you by the Shape of a War Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts. The Montevilla Jazz Festival showcases the best of Portland-based artists, including the Alan Jones Sextet, the Ed Bennett Quintet, Machete Order, and Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, and many more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th, and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Good morning, good morning. It is 6 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. You are listening to KBOO, your very own community radio station. And this is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani, and this morning I'm doing the solo host act as Lynn traverses the amazing wilds of this country, traveling places. There she is. And we hope she's having a fabulous time, because here at Positively Revolting, it is time to talk to you about the fact the world's on fire, right? There are so many issues. There are so many things going on, and all of them critical, really all of them seeming to be matters of life and death. I spent some time yesterday at the St. John's Bridge, finding that action inspiring, but also realizing the serious nature of what those activists were drawing attention to and trying to stop with Arctic drilling and, you know, global warming. We've talked with Guy McPherson recently about how that is getting into a place of catastrophe where we have already reached a tipping point and there's really no returning. So there's that going on. That's background all the time. And we also are in a period of at least heightened awareness of police violence against the people, of heightened awareness of the racism that is prevalent around the nation and the effects it has on people. We are becoming more aware of a growing movement of resistance in the Black Lives Matter movements, in the Don't Shoot movements. And that's actually where we're going to be focusing our attention this morning. It's structural racism. It's, look, I'm trying to do three things at once, but I want to welcome our guests and actually get into the heart of that discussion, because we have a lot to talk about this morning. So I want to welcome back to Positively Revolting, Teresa Rayford from Don't Shoot Portland. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Ari. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Thank you for having us.
We're going to put the microphone closer.
There right on, thank you.
Yeah, we want to make sure people hear every word you say, because you have a lot of important things to say. And we also have with us Matt Zodra. I've pronounced your name wrong after asking you three times this morning. Okay.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much, Matt. Matt is a producer, one of the filmmakers of Whitelandia, a documentary that is being made about the structural racism, about the historic conditions that under which Oregon was created. And I think it's super important that we understand our history, because if we're trying to dismantle a racist oppressive system, we need to know how it has been underpinned and how it has come to be. We need to know the ins and outs of that history so that we can in fact use that history to devise strategies to dismantle that system. That's where I'm coming from in this show this morning. And so I'm very thankful that Matt and Teresa are with us this morning. So thank you both for being here at this very early hour.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I want to start off. There's an event that's happening next weekend marking the first anniversary of Mike Brown's death, of his murder in Ferguson. We just passed the first anniversary of Eric Garner's death in New York City. And these events, these two horrific murders, really sparked a new level of international dialogue and has seemed to generate a lot of energy in a movement that is now in resistance to that system of police violence and the system of structural racism in this country. I'm talking about the Don't Shoot movement. I'm talking about Black Lives Matter. And now we're a year later. There is this event that is happening next weekend looking at the dismantling racist oppression with Whitelandia and with Black Lives Matter. And so I want to start off actually talking a little bit. Let's start off with Teresa. This last year has been something. It's the best of times, it's the worst of times, right? I have just completely overwhelmed with the amount of things to report, really horrific things to report. Deaths in custody, murders by police, things that are just with that big question mark, like we know something bad has happened. How do we put these pieces together? The death of Walter Scott, the death, I mean, there's so many. Freddie Gray. I mean, there are so many names that we could just start reciting. There have been over 600 people, according to the website Killed by Police, which aggregates news stories from around the nation, doesn't comment on them, just takes the local news reports about, oh, hey, somebody was killed by the police, and posts that link. 676 people have been killed by the police since January 1st this year. And that's after the heightened attention has really started. I don't even have a word that I can say on the radio.
Positively revolting.
maybe negatively revolting. It's horrifying. It's horrifying. This is a matter. It's not just like a theoretical thing, like, oh, it might happen to somebody. You know, this is happening in our communities. It's happening to our friends and neighbors. It's happening to our families. And it is way past time to put a stop to it. 118 murders by police since the beginning of July, right? That's in a month. So, Teresa, in this last year, I mean, you have really become very active in these movements. I wanted to just check in with you about how you are feeling. Things are going, where's the energy? How are we continuing on? Teresa, over to you.
Yeah, it's incredible. I don't know where the energy still comes from. I'm super tired, and just like you, Ari, the headlines won't stop. We're carrying so many names, and they're not just names to us. When you're in a movement like this, everything is very intimately involved in who you are personally. And so I'm looking at my self change. I'm looking at things in the world that have been around me that I didn't see clearly. And so much clarity is coming out. And so just knowing that this is a year of revolt, a year that we've all been on the ground, front line, day one, and consistently still there, it makes us empowered to know that we have this type of resilience. But at the same time, we do have to focus on what are our next steps? What are we going to do to ensure that we're continued in this fight? Because I'm sure that just because we're out here and that we know that there's almost 700 people or 600 people that have been killed this year, that's not different from what was happening last year. And it's no different than the year before, but we're now more aware. It's more clear to us. And so on our end here locally in the state of Oregon, we fought with the legislation session. You know, we had from February to July to make our voices and our influence on policymakers make a difference. And I'm kind of happy with things that happened, but it was still watered down legislation. So in my mind, it's like we still have to push harder, and we have to push harder than we did last year with all these names on us. So, you know, what are we going to do to empower? And with the event that we have coming up, we know that educating and organizing is what's going to help us continue. So
what did come of your legislative efforts?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess shutting down the state capitol in December and letting them know that we would be back in the spring made sure that everybody that had a slate, including the OBPC, which is the Oregon Black Political Convention, making sure that their directives to legislators were taken seriously. And and so we did that. We shut it down in December, and we came back in February, and we lobbied on behalf of the end profiling bill, equal rights. We lobbied with Basic Rights Oregon. I mean, everything that had to do with social justice and equality, as far as our children's education, one of the House bills for opting out was passed. You know, body cams, all different types of legislation that we wouldn't have thought would come to our lawmakers and actually pass in one session. We're like, bam, 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 one after the other. And so I'm happy about that. But at the same time, in our city, you know, you'll see certain organizations saying, look what we did. And they're not acknowledging that the people on the ground are pushing that agenda for them and that are standing right beside them. And they might not agree with our tactics, but our tactics are what's happening and what's helping move these things forward. So I'm just hoping that in the year coming, that organizations that are out there pushing, lobbying, and all of that, that they'll connect with our movement a little bit more in a respectful and considerate way that will strengthen both of us, because we're fighting for the same goals.
Absolutely. Matt, let's look at Whitelandia.
Okay.
Let's look at the documentary and get into a little bit about, why did you start making this film?
When we started, actually 2 years ago. We're coming up on the second year of the process of putting the film together.
So what inspired you? What got you started doing this?
Well, one being longtime residents of Oregon, specifically Northeast Portland, watching with disgust what was going on around us, initially with the housing, with schools, with jobs, the disparity between white and black Portland, and meeting with Dr. Cal Henry of the Oregon Assembly for Black Affairs, and Tracy, my partner, and I were on a different project, a different documentary. We met Dr. Cal through that documentary and decided we would leave it and start Whitelandia. So initially, Dr. Cal was our inspiration. We didn't know that the pre-production would go for this long. We should have sort of expected it, but things have drastically changed since day one, as far as the consciousness, of, you know, what's happening to Black America and Black Oregon and Black Portland, you know? So, to be honest with you, myself and, you know, and my partner, Tracy McDonald, are struggling a little bit with the film. The tone has changed. In the country, the tone has changed being involved with Teresa, We're trying to figure out our place in it, like how a documentary at this point in history can do justice to what's happening. And still, you know, the historical part of it, like you mentioned, was initially the focus, and it, I think it still has to be. I think people, have to be aware of the Oregon state history in order to have a sense of what's really going on in the state now. Oregon's history with Black Americans has become more in the forefront in the past couple of years. There's been a lot since we started the project. Back 2 years ago, you would never see anything in the paper, maybe every once in a while. Now, you know, the Willamette, the Mercury, the Oregonian have all pretty extensively covered the history. They've done Vanport. People I think are more aware, at least they have the ability to be more aware of the constitutional discrimination in Oregon's original constitution. I think one thing that still isn't looked at, which to me is always striking, is Oregon's huge Ku Klux Klan presence in the mm-hmm. 20s, the election of a governor, our adherence to Jim Crow. And then one thing that we've discovered for me personally, is that, you know, the history of death with young, especially young Black men, goes back, you know, we've become more aware of it, but, you know, we go back to, the 70s when Ricky Johnson was shot. Mm-hmm. That same 4 month period, there were four other young Black men shot and killed in the state of, in Portland. Very, very little news coverage, but documented if you go back and take a look at it. So you're looking, in, let's say, the mid 70s, early 70s, a 4 month period, five lives that we know of, five lives that were documented one way or the other, newsworthy. That's sort of what's happening now, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we're looking at five, six lives lost in the past 4 or 5 months or whatever the span of time. It seems like one every day, but mm-hmm. Have things changed, or have we just become more aware? Especially in the last year. So, sorry, back to the original question. That's where Whitelandia is at. We're still focused on the historical side of it. We're still trying to carry our end with getting that out there, but looking to maybe figure out how the direction of the film will change.
And I'm just going to point out, if we thought one person a day was being murdered by the police, that would be horrible. But in fact, I'm looking again at this website where it's more like 3 to 5 people every day.
On average,
across the country, killed by the police.
Yeah.
And again, it's important, I think, to mention that given our population in great ratio, right, in far over-representation, shall we say,
yes,
the people killed by police or find themselves dead in custody are... are Black people, and to try to ignore that factor, to say, well, no, the police are killing everyone, really, it's true, the police are killing everyone, but it is super important to admit and to put forth that in far higher numbers, police are killing Black and brown people. Mm-hmm. And that cannot be underscored enough, because to say otherwise is really to continue a legacy of racism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unless most people know, but Tracy, my partner, and I are white, and the crew of the film, we have a variety of people that are advising and are participating in the film. We're trying to figure out, we're working with sort of people under siege and its effect on their lives every day. And it's not affecting our lives in that same way. And I mean, that's always been the case since day one with the film. But again, it just seems so intensified and, I just wanted to point that out, that it's something, we're navigating that as well. This is an emotional time. It makes again the film's importance in getting it right, mm-hmm. but just that much more drastic for us to do.
There's so much to say, and we only have about 35 more minutes to say it. So I want to invite our listeners to call us this morning. The number here at KABU is 503-231 8187. This is a call-in show, so please do call in with your questions and your comments. But please stay on topic this morning, because this is such a serious issue. We cannot dilute it, right? Let us focus for this hour,
please,
on the Black Lives Matter movement, on the legacy of structural racism and how it is still affecting people, and how we are going to really step up to our responsibility in this generation to dismantle it.
Absolutely.
Right? That's my goal.
And I wanted to say something. And first of all, I want to say Sandy Bland. I wanted to just say her name on the air and put that out there, because one of the things that you had said is that we can act like we don't realize that this is happening in a disproportionate manner to Black people. But we just lost like 5 Black women in the last 2 weeks while in jail custody. And that would never happen in America to white women. Mm-hmm. If that happened, there would be so much outrage. And I wanted to say, like, yesterday, my friends, you know, we run with the rolling, with the rising tide. A lot of our friends are activists, the ones that helped us get organized to become this Black Lives Matter movement that we have here in Portland. I mean, helping us with everything from National Lawyers Guild to, you know, the nonviolent direct action training, and coming out in numbers, and Bike Swarm, and just all these different groups that are out here. And I wanted to say that yesterday we got global press over the St. John's Bridge, which is in my North Portland neighborhood. And a lot of people online were saying, look at everybody paying attention to these white people on the bridge, you know, and someone even mentioned Don't Shoot on one of the Oregonian links. They said, oh, you guys are letting these guys take the bridge, but you didn't let Don't Shoot Portland do it. You beat them up and you pepper sprayed them. And I looked at that and I put on their love, because I understood where that was coming from. But at the same time, I put love, because those people that took the bridge the other day that were dangling, those allies of ours, my friend Jonah, who got arrested yesterday, if it had not been for activists like that, that believe in indigenous people, that believe in our humanity, we wouldn't have the influence that we have on the ground right now. We wouldn't have been able to be that organized. When I first heard about what was happening in Ferguson, I heard it because of OP Ferguson. You had occupiers going out there and getting on the front line with these youth. And so what we have to do is we have to identify that it's not just us collectively as individuals doing our own work and manifesting what's happening. It's all of us doing it together. That work together is what's bringing us where we need to be. And if we identify a solution that we want to reach, a goal, we have to break down those egos, we have to break down those barriers, and we have to break down those walls and see clearly as what is in front of us. The history tells us what's happening in this country right now. If we want to dismantle that, it has to be intentional. And right now we are intentionally dismantling racism, and it's going to have to be a system break. We got to break it, and by all means.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think looking at, really, like I said at the beginning of the show, the world's on fire,
mm-hmm.
right? There are critical issues, many critical issues, matters of life and death for the planet and for the people on it, for really everything, okay?
Yes.
And so how can we support each other in these movements? And you've just spoken very that... I couldn't say it better. You know, there's no need for me to even try. We need each other. We need to support each other. And we need to learn from each other's movements and work together. Because dismantling a system, that takes a lot of people.
It does.
And it takes a lot of perspectives with a lot of different skill sets. Let's just say.
Yeah, no one's that powerful to be able to do it themselves. Nobody has a great, fantastic idea that'll change the world, or we'd be in a changed world.
Right. You know, when I was 14, I really wanted to be that one person. But now I realize, no, it really does
you
take all
crew,
of us.
Right? You want crew.
Right. Let's go ahead and start talking to our listeners. Good morning, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. This is going to be quick. Systemic racism, as far as I'm concerned, what's happening now is George Zimmerman's verdict, okay? That led to vigilantism and the cops just going crazy, okay? But it starts really with the media. Channel 8 News, Channel 2 News, Willamette Week. They love their subliminal racism. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave. Let's go ahead and talk to Mike. Good morning, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Great show. I'm glad you're talking about this. And I was curious for Teresa what the connection is between Black Lives Matter and Don't Shoot Portland. Is there a difference, or how are they related?
Well, the thing is that there was a call to action in August when Mike Brown was killed, and it came from the Don't Shoot Coalition, Hands Up, Don't Shoot, Million Hoodies, Dream Defenders, the Trayvon Martin Foundation. And so myself, who was already connected because we had done Trayvon Martin rallies here, and I've been an activist for 5 years, I took the call of action. We protested the next day. We protested from that day till now. And we went from using hashtags Ferguson, Mike Brown, rest in peace, Michael Brown, to Black Lives Matter. And I think that everybody started utilizing the hashtag Black Lives Matter probably in the fall. But at all of our protests, from Hands Up, Don't Shoot, Black Lives Matter, and all that, it was just a natural, organized chant. We were using our Twitters, we were using our Facebooks, we were using our Vines, we were using our Ustreams, and we were all saying the same thing in unison. And so when people, like, I've been to several conferences since the protest started, and we're all organizers from all different organizations from around the country and around the world. And some of us have affinity groups like the Dream Defenders. Some of us have not one more, or I call genocide or whatever, but we're all Black Lives Matter movement organizers and activists, because that's what the media has called us, regardless of what our names are. And that is what our united movement is about.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your call. 503-231-8187, the number to call in this morning. I also want to invite you to follow Positively Revolting on Twitter at Positive Revolt. I've been a retweeting fiend over this last week. And also our Facebook page. You can like us on Facebook. You can find us there, Positively Revolting. You can also email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. It's a good way to keep conversations going throughout the week and to stay aware of the issues that are coming across our, coming across our attention, because there is so much happening. Once a week, a little conversation, it's not quite enough. So do follow along on social media, and give us a call now, 503-231-8187. Good morning, a different Mike. So, good morning for Mike's. Good morning, Mike. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, say, I just Googled whether more white people or black people are killed by police last year. And according to the Washington Post, there's many more white people killed by police.
Right. And I think when you look at our populations in this country, that's where we start finding the disparity. Teresa, you want to take that?
Well, I mean,
what do you mean?
Math. Like, if you count numbers of people that are killed and you break it into a percentage, then our numbers are higher, even though you have more white people in this country.
So you're saying that according to population, it has to be equal?
I'm saying according to population, it's not equal. There's more white people in this country than there are black people, but there are more black people that are being killed based on the numbers of us that are here.
It's in the ratio of the population. It's just really looking at statistics, and this is not the time I'm going to get into how to do statistics, right? But if you look into statistics and you actually check out the, how you count populations and what's affecting them, you can do the math. And you will, in fact, find out that given the populations of black and brown people in this country, proportionally, they are on the receiving end of police murders and police brutality and police harassment, right? There's a continuum, way more than white people. So that's what I'm going to say about that. Do some math, do some research on how you actually do statistics. Because if you just take raw numbers, yeah, you're going to find that. But that's misleading. Do the math, do the statistics, right? Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about this event that's happening. It's the 7th through the 9th. It's Friday through Sunday. Teresa, let's have some details about that.
Oh, wow. Well, it's exciting. I was at a conference, a socialism conference in Chicago for 4th of July. And I sat on a panel called the New Jim Crow Being Killed Every 28 Hours. And I got to meet a lot of youth from Ferguson and from Baltimore and from Boston and from California. And all of these youth are from the Black Lives Matter movements, regardless of whatever organizations they're called. But what I was finding out is that here in Portland, the legislative power that we've used to keep our feet on the ground, like we're using our direct action and policy action to make a difference. And what I found out is in some of those different communities, they're not as focused on politics being a leverage or a vehicle that they can use to help enhance their movement. And so while we were out there in Chicago, you know, for 5 days, that's all we talked about was how to bring in the intersectionality of all of these different movements in order to empower and make ourselves stronger. And so I'm getting all of these invites to come to different conferences and to come to anniversaries. And I thought to myself, I said, no, I'm going to be in Portland with my people. I said, but what I want to do is give you a gift, and it's going to be like a Ferguson Unity gift. But I want to give them a gift of information and education in a balanced way that helps them use it as a blueprint to start organizing around policy and politics within their own communities. And so we came up with this 3-day conference. And again, it's based on the Oregon Black Political Convention, which has these different themes of Black youth and political action and police accountability and education and community development and health and, you know, just all these various things that we have been focused on during our movement, because, you know, of course, we've been shutting down school boards and, you know, just fighting for everything. So healthcare and 15 now. And so when we have these 2 days of the conference, we're basically going to have people that are leaders in our community that are going to speak to these things. Me, Mike Crenshaw, and hopefully Devin Williams, if he's feeling better, will be the moderators, and we'll basically be talking to the leaders and getting not only the experience that we need, but also a call to action from each one. So for 2 days, we're going to be doing the informational, educational, and it's going to be awesome because we have some really amazing people, and I'm not going to tell who they are until Monday. But we're going to have some really amazing people on these panels that are going to help us become more stronger because of the education policy. But then on the 9th, we're going to be doing this community event, a community art project in honor of Mike Brown. And we're doing it at the Jade Multicultural Center, the New Apano Center, out there on Southeast 82nd and Division. And it'll go from 1 to 5 o'clock. We're asking people to get there at noon. We're looking for donatable art supplies because at first we wanted to do a big giant mural on the building. It's the old Tom Peterson's building, and I thought it would be perfect for great.
Right. There's a reason why they're recognized. Okay.
Yeah, Tom Peterson's in Gloria too. But the building is appealing because it has all these windows around it, and I thought, wow, this would be great if we could paint over the windows. And at first, you know, I got the, oh yeah, that'd be great. And so in my mind, I was like, yeah, it's done. And then I come back around and take my walkthrough and do the paper sign. And they're like, yeah, you can't do that. But if you do something, make sure that you remove it. But that would be awesome. So now I'm looking at big enough canvases and big enough banners, and how much paper can we get to just have our community just come in and create their own art, hopefully work with a graphic designer named Ashley, who's out here doing amazing art. He has a big police brutality art on Stark. If you drive down Stark, I think it's past 40th, but he's going to be out there helping us with artistic direction. But we're just inviting the whole community to come out, make their own banners, bring their old posters, and let's paste them up and just do some type of big giant picture, show the love to Mike Brown and, you know, the Mike Brown Senior family and everybody that's in Ferguson, and let them know that they do have unity here in Oregon. Glenn Waco will be hosting that event. I'm hoping that him and Marcus, they're going to surprise me, but they're going to have different artists, spoken word. They'll have a PA system and speakers out there, so I know they're going to probably do some music because they're rappers. Hot dogs, hamburgers, fun, but just a really family-friendly event all day from 1 to, let's say, about 5 o'clock on Sunday, August 9th, in honor of Mike Brown.
And that's right about 82nd and Division.
That's right.
So August 7th and 8th, it's at the First Unitarian Church in Fuller Hall. Is that right?
That's right. And on Friday, it's going to run from 3:30. We're going to have a networking meet and greet from 3:30 to 4, and then we'll start the panels till 8 o'clock. And then on Saturday, the panels go from 1 to 5:30.
And for more information, or if people want to some way get substantively involved in this last week as details come together,
yes,
how do they contact?
They can go to our Facebook page to stay up with everything, or if they want to get involved, if they want to support us or find out a little bit more information, they can email us at don'tshootportland@gmail.com. And again, that's don'tshootportland@gmail.com, not don'tshootpdx. So,
but your Facebook page is don'tshootpdx.
Don'tshootpdx is the Facebook page.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure people know how to contact you, because I think, you know, again, it's important as we build movements.
Well, I wanted to say something also, Ari, because I have a lot of friends that are with Surge and different groups. And what I'm hearing from them is that they want to help, but people don't know how to help or if they should help, because I think they have issues with, you know, we're in Portland, so we're in a small little barrel. But people don't know if it's if they can help because they're white, or if they can help because they're down with a different group that might be doing the same thing. My thing is that if you have the capacity and the resources to help anybody that's fighting for their lives, you get into that fight and you help them, period. So,
yep. Let's take another caller, shall we? Sharom is on the air. Good morning, Sharom.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing okay.
Excellent show. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I think the murder of any human being, whether it be black or white, red or black, red or yellow, infant or baby, is a tragedy in our country and in the world. And I think we need to look at the deeper root of the problem here, and Dr. Ben Carson spelled it out very clearly a couple weeks ago on the news when he said, especially in the black community, we have a destruction of the black family. We don't have fathers in the family anymore. And in order to have a good family, you need a father and you need a mother. And 90% of the criminals, black criminals in jail, don't have a father, didn't have a father figure in their lives. And I think that is the root of the problem.
Okay.
See, our black teenagers are being sent out in the world without a proper example of a father. And you got people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton who I...
Okay, so, we're gonna hold you for a moment and...
I was going to say that's anti-black propaganda. Mm-hmm. America has family traditional value issues. We're dysfunctional as a family in America. Black America is no different than white America or Asian America or Indian America or Hispanic America or mulatto America or whatever. We're Americans and we're dysfunctional. And when you talk about black on black crime and black statistics in the black family, that's anti-black propaganda.
Yeah, at its face. Also ignoring so much. I don't even want to go down that road because it is, in fact,
you
I
just
believe,
put a sign and a stripe through and say, shut up.
Yeah, it's sort of the red herring, right? All right, so enough said about that. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And we encourage you to do so. Again, you are listening to Positively Revolting. We are here until 9 o'clock this morning talking with Matt Zedrow, who is one of the producers of Whitelandia, a documentary being made right now about the structural racism in America, in Oregon specifically, and Teresa Rayford of Black Lives Matter, Don't Shoot Portland. And talking about coalition building among many other topics and the intersectionality that is important to bring out. But again, all of that really just underscores how important it is for all of that attention, all the intersectionality, to look at how to dismantle the systems of oppression that are propping up the system we currently live in, right?
Yeah. So we have to be really intentional, and we have to, I mean, I'm going to use this word again, we have to stay clear on what we're doing, because we can also become the problem. I've noticed with our ally movement, and I want to start calling them freedom fighters, because I heard somebody say something like, I don't need an ally, I need a freedom fighter. We need freedom fighters. Mm-hmm. But I've noticed that even in our ally movement, there's a lot that's happened over the last year. You have people that are coming in and have their own opinions, have their own ideas, and then you have people that don't respect their opinions and don't respect their ideas. And then you have group that beats on them and scares everybody into not dealing with them anymore. And there's so much of that that's happened over the last year that I just have to say, if we're focused on what we're doing intentionally, don't get into that. I've seen groups that I'm close with within our group that are trying to figure out whose side they're on when they're fighting for Black Lives Matter. And I'm like, there's not a side to be on. And even them being indecisive and having those discussions creates more of an issue for the people that are out here fighting for their lives. If you're not directly connected to the people that you care about or that you're supporting or that you're standing up for, don't find somebody that looks like them and say, I'm going to identify all of my courage and rage into this person's opportunity. It doesn't make you any better. It doesn't make you anti-racist. It doesn't make you a comrade. It doesn't make you an ally in the movement. It just makes you like the guy that was screaming the anti-Black propaganda.
Yeah, I think that it's super important. We all learn from each other in the movement. And we're all going to make missteps, mm-hmm. right? Because we're human, we're learning, and we're all raised under these oppressive systems. So we have, we have been indoctrinated into racism. We've been indoctrinated into sexism. Yes. We have been indoctrinated into homophobia. We've been indoctrinated into classism, right? So it's the air we breathe growing up in this society. And so to say, oh, well, I'm past all that. I cleared myself of all that bigotry. I don't have any of these preconceived notions anymore. And so what I do
brown
is...
people, you're not past it.
It's like...
Let me see.
That
Which
just...
one do I want?
Doesn't work, right? So we need to be each other's education mm-hmm. in this movement. And so sometimes we make missteps. And I'm just going to go ahead and want to talk for just a moment about the documentary, about Whitelandia. And there is you came under criticism as a producer of this documentary early on. And you have learned from that criticism, from everything I understand, and have been able to, I want to just talk about things that you've learned in this process and maybe to address some of the criticism that's still flying around there in social media, because I think once they see somebody make a mistake, they can't quite shift out of that, you know? And I think that that's doing the entire movement a disservice, because mm-hmm. we're all going to make mistakes. Yes. If we're pushing ourselves to do stuff, right, to do edgy, important, radical things, to dismantle the systems of oppression under which we find ourselves, we're going to misstep every now and then. Yes. And we need to hold each other accountable, but we also need to have some compassion as we learn together, right? Matt, over to you. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the things that you have been criticized for in Whitelandia and how you've addressed that?
Okay. My partner Tracy's frantically texting me as this subject comes up. So early in the process, just a small bit of history, we used some public domain footage of Walida Imarisha. I'm just going to go ahead and let's just put it out there. We used some public domain footage that was perceived as stolen from Miss Imarisha. From that point forward, we were perceived as a certain population perceived us as thieving from this person, and then therefore de facto from the from Black women activists, scholars. We were seen as white colonialists,
appropriating
material. Mm-hmm. In order to try to stem the controversy, we held back from reacting. We put out a simple apology stating that, you know, our communication with Walida hadn't been clear, although we were communicating with her at the time. And that hadn't been clear. And that that was a lesson learned, clarity. Okay, especially in this, you know, circumstance. So we moved forward personally with the film, with our advisors, with our staff, with you know, Teresa, with the Oregon Assembly for Black Affairs, and you know, kept our group broad and listened to them. And that's for us, you know, as the producers of the film, as the facilitators of this story, not the participants directly. Listening has always been key for us, okay? And that's where I would say, if I had to define a lesson that was learned, it would be to, you know, keep your ears open and keep your eyes open, and, you know, try to disseminate that racism and you know, all the phobias and all the isms that you have, like you said, breathed since you were born, and try to take them into consideration, you know, with your actions. So recently we did another fundraising campaign, and it bubbled back to the surface. So again, the reason I say that I'm not, maybe not the person to address this, I tend to be a little more aggressive and a little more defensive. Let's just say that there is a lot of misinformation that continues to perpetuate. And what we've learned is to look to the people that we want to support and who support us back, and just to keep our heads up.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, with the film, we'd like the film to dissect, you know, the structure of racism and institutionalized racism, specifically in the state of Oregon and then across the country, you know, and to have it as a learning tool for our youth, to, you know, to teach the people what the history is of the state that they have moved into recently or have lived in all their lives. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there are people who have lived here all their lives who don't know what Vanport is, you know, or that we had the KKK, or that as a northern state, we still, you know, subscribe to Jim Crow. And, you know, the police brutality may not be as prevalent over the course of Oregon, Portland's, you know, 30, 40 year history, but it has been there. And there are incidents that need to be learned, and there are, you know, studied and talked about, and there's continued brutality on a daily basis and discrimination. Mm. I could get more specific if you'd like to. I'm trying to read your
got 7 minutes left.
All right. Okay. So. Yeah. So I'll just stop there.
Okay. You know, it's all good information, and I think we could easily continue this conversation for another hour and a half, maybe three. You know, but we only got 7 minutes.
It's really a game of telephone, too. I mean, really, you know, and we were recently accused online and of calling a black woman a savage. And other racial slurs, which is just a lie. It's not. It's absolutely not true. How do you defend yourself against that without looking like a beep? You know,
right.
Really, I mean, where do you come at it from? How do you approach that?
Well, I was going to say that with our panel that we have going on, it's basically structured on the emphasis of this movie. Like, when I first heard about Whitelandia, I probably felt the same way. Everyone, Whitelandia? So what is this about? You know, and I don't want to hear black people's victim stories about what's happened, because we're the victim. I want to hear from the people who actually put these laws and legislation and amended these constitutional rights and violated our civil liberties. I want to hear from them on their consciousness and what took this powerful consciousness into political action and created the constitution that we live in that provides the state-sanctioned discrimination. And like Matt said, that's across the country. So when I thought to using Whitelandia as a part of our anniversary for the Black Lives Matter movement, it was because we live in Whitelandia, and Whitelandia does not respect our black lives. And in order for us to say that our black lives matter, we have to dismantle Whitelandia, but we have to know what it is. It's not just the feeling of being discriminated. It's the legal right for those who discriminate against us to do that. It's the legal right for our children to be getting killed in the streets by people with guns that are supposed to, in our minds, swore to protect and serve us, but have the legal right to murder us dead in the streets. So unless we actually know what the system of Whitelandia is, there's no way we can understand healing or reform or a new world. It's not going to get any better. You have to mess up what's in place. And what's in place is not broken. It works. It legitimately works. It's been working since, what, 1700s and before. So if we want to dismantle it, we need to be able to recognize it. And I believe that with Cal's support in this project, that it'll be a great way to be educated on recognizing what it is.
And just for a little bit of clarification about the event too, Whitelandia's role is, like, Teresa is a board member of the Oregon Assembly for Black Affairs, which is headed by Dr. Calvin Henry. And the Oregon Assembly for Black Affairs is our main advisory group for the film. So we come in a very supportive role for Black Lives Matter and Don't Shoot Portland in the event. I think what Teresa said about the concept of Whitelandia is, at this point for this event, more important and more of a focus in the film itself. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to clarify that you know, our role comes through the Oregon Assembly for Black Affairs and through Teresa.
All right. I want to squeeze in a couple more callers. James, you're on the line. Good morning, James.
Good morning. Yes. Yeah, so, I definitely, it's so good. I heard about Whitelandia about 6 months ago, and I've just been really excited about it. I can't wait till I get to see it. But it's just surprising, like, how many people in our community want to keep that sort of thing hidden. You know, it's. Mm-hmm. I always talk about how there's a double whitewashing in our community, how we have the older white folks who don't want to talk about it and the new younger white folks who move here don't know about it, and it all just kind of gets swept under the rug. And it's good to see that it's being brought into visibility. It's something important to say, and then anyway,
that was very important.
I think you just did, actually. James, thank you very much for your call this morning. And let's go ahead and take Francis. We just have a couple moments left. Francis, very quickly.
Hi, I was happy. I just tuned in, and I was happy to hear that this movie is still in the works. I had contacted you, sir, about several months ago to indicate that I had some information in your research about the gentrification of Northeast Portland and all the different systematic things that were done in the community under the city of Portland,
yeah,
such as the chronic drug-free zone, mm-hmm. the chronic nuisance ordinances, da da da, on and on and on. And in recent history of Portland, we can document some very outstanding, nefarious activities that would, to me, be appropriate for Whitelandia film to see how it still continues to this day.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you still have contact information you can give people?
Yes, ma'am. And please bear with us, too. We still have your contact information. I remember you, Francis.
Sweet.
And we've had to pull back just a little bit with the events of the last year and financial.
Okay, I understand. I wondered what had happened.
Yeah. Please forgive us, and all please right. bear with us. We will be back to you, and all of the people that we're in contact with, and all those stories will Sweet. Be represented. And
fantastic.
And then anytime if you need any information or to contact us, just whitelandia.com has our phone numbers, our emails, information on where the film is at, anything that you'd like to know. And thank you for calling. It's good to hear from you again.
Yeah, Francis is a regular caller to the show and an amazing long-time community activist in Portland.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
Well, and with that, really, we are just about out of time. I want to make sure that we give people details about the events coming up next weekend,
yes.
How to get more information. So, Teresa.
All right. And thank you again, Ari, for having us on and giving us this opportunity. I just want to ask everybody, if you're interested in the Black Lives Matter movement and you've seen us protesting and you want to know why we're out here protesting and what it's going to do to make things better, come to this event. August 7th and August 8th are 2 days of panels that we're going to have at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. I'll make sure that Ari has that information to put on the website, because
we have it on the Positively Revolting Facebook page, and we will make sure also KBOO is a co-sponsor of this event.
Absolutely.
So it's going to be on the KBOO events calendar
right
on the right-hand column of our homepage, kboo.fm.
Right on. So come to the 2-day panels. It's going to be Friday and Saturday. Those are going to be very informational. And then also the family day, that's going to be amazing, community art project. And if people know about Don't Shoot Portland, we run around with this big old giant banner that says Community Action Plan. So for us to, you know, that was for us to bust a cap back at the police for, you know, violating our civil liberties. And so with the community art project, we're still busting that cap. So hope everybody will come and join us.
And for more information, how to get a hold of you, how to join up, how to be more involved,
Go to Don't Shoot Portland, Don't Shoot PDX on Facebook, or you can send me an email to don'tshootportland@gmail.com. I want those emails. We need your support. We need your help. Thank you.
And Matt, how do people contact you again?
Through the Whitelandia website, whitelandia.com, and also through Whitelandia Facebook page. Definitely, we're very active on Facebook, and we'll be posting information as well about the event and available for to answer any questions over the next week.
All right. And again, a reminder to listeners that you can follow along on Facebook with Positively Revolting. You can find us at facebook.com/positively revolting, and you can also follow us on Twitter @positive revolt. You can email us positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. And with that, we are out of time.
Right on.
Thank you, Teresa. Thank you, Matt, for joining us this morning and getting this information out there. Much success.
You rock.
Thank you.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.